Welcome to the Prompt Engineering Podcast, where we teach you the art of writing effective prompts for AI systems like ChatGPT, Midjourney, DALL-E, and more. Here's your host, Greg Schwartz.
Welcome to a joint episode of the Prompt Engineering Podcast and
the How to Talk to AI Podcast.
We've got some awesome guests. So go ahead and introduce yourselves, guys.
Yeah, I'm Aaron Patzer, the co-founder and CEO of Vital.
And I'm Felix Bran, Vice President of Data Science at Vital.
And they have a terrific product that they have launched today. We're going to hear all about it. I think it's something that will resonate with everyone and anyone that's been to the doctor and had questions about what was being told to them.
Yes. Yeah. I already tested it after watching your talk.
Cool.
Really?
Yeah. So I have sleep apnea.
Yeah.
I put in a long diagnosis with a bunch of stuff that I'm like, okay, I think I know what that is. I don't know what the hell that is.
Yeah.
And it was like, sleep apnea, obstructive, and two other things.
Yeah.
Go.
Fantastic.
Okay. That's great.
Yeah.
I think, like we said, what person hasn't seen a whole long list of doctor's notes or even been in a situation where you're maybe in an inpatient in the hospital and then doctor on rounds is coming by and telling you something at a million miles a minute because he's got 20 other people to see. But it's probably important because it affects your own health and being and like you're probably already out of it anyway because you're in the hospital. What a terrific way to provide
doctor's notes are really almost like a foreign language. As I said in my talk, doctors don't say nosebleed. They say epistasis. They don't say, hey, your mom has had a stroke. They say, oh, she's had a cerebral infarction. They use all of these abbreviations. It's almost impossible to understand. And so we used a large language model as the core of what we call our doctor to patient translator, and it's at vital.io/translate. It's free to the public, available worldwide, literally as of today. You're just catching me at a good time. And we're happy to tell you a bit about the prompts, the classifiers, the pre-parsing, all the things that happen to make that possible technically.
Yeah, that would be great.
I would love to delve into some of the technical aspects. Maybe this is a better question for Felix. Could you tell us a little bit about how the model was maybe trained and what data was used be able to produce these great completions?
Sure. We've tried a number of different prompts because there are actually a lot of different types of doctor's notes. Mm-hmm. And with the public facing stuff, we know that we're going to get the whole gamut from imaging all the way to discharge instructions. Mm-hmm. And we know how important that stuff is. There's a whole bunch of literature. People, when they get their paper discharge instructions, upwards of 90% of them chuck them straight in the bin as soon as they leave the hospital. And the literature is super clear. When people understand their care and understand the follow-up instructions the doctors are giving them, their care situation is way, way better.
Makes sense.
Yep. So we've looked at different prompts for different situations and then built a pre-model classifier, a pre-LLM classifier, also using a language model with a smaller one, deciding which of our various prompts should be applied to the notes, so categorizing the notes. Yep. And then we have a whole bunch of post-parsing that comes out. We take sections out of a translation. We plug those sections into different parts of the website. Maybe when you saw it, you could see that you get like a very brief summary and then also a much more sort of technical breakdown.
Yes.
So we're getting the LLM to pull out like a lot of information about what's in your doctor's note, but we want to show you in like a digestible summary first.
Yeah. I think an important piece of context is a lot of these doctor's notes, they're 10 or 15 pages long and they have 80% boilerplate.
Yeah.
They have, hey, don't smoke, or I don't. Hey, here's COVID education. Okay, you're 2 years out of date. And they put a lot of filler in there. And this is actually just a fraction of our primary business. Our primary business is patient experience software. It guides you through an ER visit, or if you have to stay overnight in the hospital, it explains your lab results, how long you're going to wait, and then what your notes mean.
Yeah.
And it's because we have the experience with a million patients a year using it, we know the structure of notes from all over the country.
Yeah.
Oh. And so we can pre-parse, and instead of a 10 or 15 page, we can get it down to actually, we only need to pass 3 or 4 pages into the LLM.
Wow.
That's an important business and engineering consideration because cost and speed, also context window.
Yeah.
If you're doing, especially if you're using few shot training with an LLM, which is a good idea so that you know what output you want to get, you'll blow through your prompt, your few shot, your data, and then your output has to fit into a 4K window or a 16K window. And so you need to do a few things to give yourself as much buffer as possible beforehand.
Yeah.
That makes complete sense with having the almost sub prompts acting like little sub agents themselves trained to say, just get rid of all the boilerplate stuff that's not unique to that patient's differential diagnosis.
Exactly. So deciding which part you're going to do more or less with your own code or your own classifiers, and then how much to send, especially if you're using a commercial LM. And we've used both. Felix has got Llama up and running. Llama 2, yeah. MedPalm LM from Google, which is medical specific. Obviously, the OpenAI, we can't actually use OpenAI directly. You have to use it through Azure because you need this to be HIPAA compliant, SOC 2 trust. We're in a regulated industry. OpenAI will not sign all of those things. You actually have to work your way through corporate Microsoft.
Yep.
They'll determine whether you're a worthwhile person or not and whether they're willing to take the risk. And then you have to sign these contracts. And so if you put all of it, you can, with a sophisticated prompt, put it all through like a GPT. You can say, classify this. Is this a discharge report? Is this a physical therapy report? Or is this a hostile input? By the way, you should always protect against hostile input.
Yeah.
Is this a non-English input? Okay. Is this something else entirely? So you want, and then in your prompt, you can say, based on the classification, then do this. But if you do all that, your prompt starts to get very complicated and very big. So you can use that to prototype. But when you go into production, this is also very slow, it gets very expensive. You run a classifier that's much simpler and much quicker on top of it, and then you don't have the expense, your prompt's shorter. And then you can say, if it's this, go to this prompt. If it's that, go to that prompt.
Yeah.
You can also templatize prompts. So if you say, I want the output in Spanish, you can put a variable in your prompt. So the prompts, don't think of them as static strings. Think of them as a programming language that is, frankly, pseudocode.
Yeah.
One of the things that this is a bit like medical specific, but the part that's very important to patients is the plan and assessment, what the doctor says you're supposed to do. Here's the problem. At some hospitals, it's called plan and assessment. At other hospitals, it's called assessment. At other hospitals, it's called plan. At other hospitals, it's got like an abbreviation. And with classic programming, if I say match panda and I give it pandas with a plural, it's like, no.
That's where you got a space in your column header.
Exactly. But with an LM, I can just be like, it's going to be called this or probably this. It's got stuff that kind of looks like this.
Yeah.
And like, it's good enough that if I explained it to you guys, you'd be like, oh, okay, I know what you're looking for. That's the power of LLMs, is you can give them vague pseudocode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to me, that's mind-blowing. This guy actually knows the math behind how that's possible.
Nice. So real quick, before we get into that, just for the audience, part of what I do on my podcast is like, what are all these technical terms? Content window, number one, is literally how much stuff you're putting into the prompt, but also how much it's putting out. And if you do too much, it forgets the stuff outside the context window. And so you have to be careful how long everything is. That's what they're talking about when you're saying, if I can pull pieces of the prompt out and only run them separately, it's way better.
It's a key reason to innovate on your own models, because for a long time, you were working with this 4K context window. And if you're doing this few-shot in-context learning, as Aaron says, you just run through it.
Yeah.
And also, I'm the CEO, as well as maybe you can tell I have a bit of an engineering background, not as good as this guy. I don't have the British accent.
That's true.
It also
that adds 20 IQ points.
We're here for the grammar,
right?
Yes.
But as a CEO, I have to think through the economics, right? So if you were using GPT-4 and you give it the 16K window or the 32K window, the maximum one, it's going to cost you, if you fully fill that, it's going to cost you about 48 cents per translation or transformation, right?
Yeah.
We have 1 million patients on our platform. They have about 5 notes each. You do the math on that and you're spending $5,000 a day if that's what you do. You don't need to. You use smaller context windows, or you use 3.5 Turbo, or you run Llama, or you use one LLM to pre-parse for a different LLM. Mm-hmm. You can do, those are the tricks that, like, practically speaking, this is an immature industry because you have to hand do all of that.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is some of these problems are really exciting and new. As Aaron says, you're trying to pull out something that's very undefined in free text document. Okay, so that's, you need some modern stuff to do that. But some of these problems are pretty traditional. Yep. Classifying a document, and you've got plenty of examples. Mm-hmm. You don't need to go and use your OpenAI LLM to do this classification problem. We've been doing this for a long time, and you can do them a lot cheaper.
Yeah, it's slow and expensive to use OpenAI or Google or Meta for basic classification, but it's great for prototyping.
So the key insight is work out the piece that you really need the expensive tech for and ensure that you boil down the problem only to that using other pieces of technology upstream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you handle like the if you have all these prompts essentially acting as agents and you have to have this sequence occur in a specific order, how do you asynchronously, is there a specific layer that's doing the handoff? Are they doing a turnover at rounds between
mutex
prompt?
Synchronization?
Yeah, I mean,
get a little technical.
So we use an event-sourced architecture.
Yeah.
So this is outside of AI. It basically means that we handle streaming data quite well.
Mm-hmm.
So we have data that's streaming from over 100 hospitals now, more or less real time. It comes out of Cerner, Epic, whatever the electronic medical record system is. So a doctor writes a new note, finishes it, it hits our system and goes onto the queue, gets pre-parsed, classified, cut up into little bits, and then divvied out to these little agents. So yeah, you need to synchronize it. So you have queues of work. Mm-hmm. Those queues can back up. We just launched this.
Unfortunately, at this point, we had some audio challenges. So the video will continue, but going forward, we're only able to use audio from a much lower quality source. So it's going to get kind of noisy from here. I'm sorry about that. The rest of the interview is definitely very interesting, but it was a pretty noisy room.
I've been so busy with talking to people. For all I know, the system has got an hour wait queue backup, but it won't fall over.
When I tested it, it took two tries and it was about 45 seconds, but it worked.
That means
eventually.
That's actually, I'm like happy to hear that, not from your experience, but it means that we're putting serious load on this. It means that people are, this is a good day in the history of IT. But you have to have a robust architecture to handle that and not get things out of order and handle server restarts and all of that. So that's a pretty engineering response, but yeah, it can be handled.
And to speak to Aaron's answer earlier, this is something new that we're doing, but we have, four products at the moment?
Yes.
We have a patient experience product, which is going to guide your experience through the emergency room.
Yeah.
And we're doing a bunch of AI there. We're predicting how long are you going to wait for a bed? How long are you going to wait until a doctor comes and sees you?
Yes.
What are the lab results that are coming back? What do they really mean for you? We've got a product for care teams. We're providing clinical decision support alerting. So are you likely to get sepsis at some point in your stay?
Yep.
How likely are you to be admitted? Like allowing doctors to manage their workflows using this kind of alerting system.
Nice.
We've got a system which allows you to find follow-up care afterwards. Yep. And so basically, we've been doing this for a long time. We've been doing it, six years in. Yeah, we've been dealing with this huge pipe of patient data for a long time. We're not new to this. The event sourcing stuff, that's not for the LLM stuff. That's running our systems. That's running our systems at 100 hospitals, a million patient visits.
Nice.
That stuff has been the easy part for sure.
That's right. So if this sounds foreign or if you don't have a system like that without the robust retry mechanism, it'll take you a couple of years of engineering to get to that rock-solid system.
That's some getting your hands dirty just in the muck,
coding
and debugging.
With medical data, the messiest data I've worked with so far.
That's a great segue maybe into. Can you tell us a little bit about the process that you had to go through to have an LLM handling HIPAA secure patient data? Because I know this is a big fear that a lot of enterprise customers have. We don't want our trade secrets to get out there. We have legal proprietary interactions with our clients. Tell us a little bit about that.
We're in a regulated industry, right? This is fortunately or unfortunately not new to me. I was the founder of a company called Mint.com. We took the usernames and passwords for 25 million people and 100 million bank accounts.
Including me. That was a long time.
Including me. And me, actually.
And have never had a security breach, at least to my knowledge. I sold the company about a decade ago. So we're used to dealing with sensitive information. You want outside penetration testing, outside audits. High trust is even more thorough, is routine outside security audits. Honestly, it can sometimes be a pain to log into our own systems, require multi-factor fingerprints and a drop of blood, but it is very secure.
Give it some training data, right?
And then you cannot do this with OpenAI. You have to go with Google will sign what's known as a BAA, a business associates agreement, and it's part of the medical chain of liability that says, hey, we have the right insurance. If we mess up, we have to legally report it to you, and you have to report it back to the health system. Here's our security practices, and we have to look at those, and we have a whole compliance office to do all of this. And so you actually can't go, in some sense, with the LLM startups. Microsoft Azure was a fantastic choice to start out with. Google's been aggressive once they saw what we were doing, because this has been out internally in our products for 2 or 3 months. And but they're also Google and Microsoft. They know what they're doing when it comes to security.
Yeah.
Honestly, when it comes to medical information, it's all of the people who are still running local servers with, yeah, that's
oh,
half.
Wow.
You want to know why they have so many like malware attacks? They're on an old version of Windows. They don't patch their stuff, and they may or may not be the best IT people in the business. I absolutely trust the security of AWS and Microsoft and Google, because they have too much to lose as big companies. We have a super secure system, and we trial it all the time.
And obviously, our BAA includes none of our data being used for training and like online learning.
Of course.
Yeah.
Nice. Speaking of the patient experience, right?
Yeah.
Is it a bespoke interaction each time I log on to the app, or does it keep my health record, so to speak, so I can refer back to the last time I used it? And then is that stored locally on my device, or is it used in any sort of process to make the tool better?
So our primary business is a tool that guides you through your visit at an ER or inpatient, and that is visit-based. So we know what your health history is, and we might show you a little bit of your past visit, but it's meant to use at the time that you're at the hospital or the emergency room or having surgery or something like that. And it's just walking you through that experience and understand your lab results. These are the videos you should watch so you can understand it. These are the medications and what you need to know about the side effects. We give you access to that data for the couple weeks following your visit, but we always hand you off to the patient portal, at least for now. And mm-hmm. I will be tight-lipped about whether you will ever have a full health history. I.e., I've been pitched probably a dozen times on, we're the mint for healthcare. And I was like, I could do the mint.
Sounds vaguely familiar as a business concept.
I've done this before, so nothing to announce today. It's in the back of my mind.
I'm sure people would, of course, it would resonate with someone to be able to query years and years of interactions, and not to mention the opportunities that if you apply some machine learning over top of some of that, diagnostic opportunities to catch things early.
Now it's like you're inside what my long-term business vision is. Theoretically, I could calculate your health future if I had a big enough data set.
Yep.
And keep in mind that at Vital, we now see 2% of all emergency and hospital visits.
That's quite a lot.
I mean, for a startup that's been around for not that long, that's a pretty good sample size. We can see how diseases progress and that there's more of this type of fall in the winter than there is in the summer, right?
Mm-hmm. And this, I know there's entire industries like the health insurance industry that has it modeled on curves exactly when you're going to die based on the fact that you went skydiving once when you were 31.
Sure, yeah. You know?
I could probably predict whether Bird and Lime are doing business well based on the number of elbow injuries and wrist fractures that we can plot over time. That's unfortunately not a joke.
Wow. Okay, then I have to ask, since Google got rid of the, I forget what they called it, but the flu predictor feature that they had for so long. Is that something you guys might potentially bring up?
No, we won't use that sort of stuff. It's really interesting, and we probably could do it internally.
And we did come up with a COVID checker.
We did come up with a COVID checker that was used 1.5 million times.
We
were the first one out before Google, before Microsoft. We were, CDC considered using us. I was literally on the phone with the White House task force in the middle of the night developing this thing. 1.5 million uses within the first month.
We did the COVID checking for the state of Oregon, right?
Yeah.
The whole state. Wow. We pivoted the whole company as soon as the pandemic started. We said, okay, we've got all this health data coming in. We've got the data science chops. Let's try and do something as quickly as we can.
Yeah.
Nice.
But the sort of North Star for the company is what's right for the patient. Will it improve patient outcomes? I'm really tired of most of healthcare. I'm looking at you, Medicare Advantage. who is frankly just financial arbitrage.
Yeah.
They're basically like, okay, so the government says New York's a more expensive place. We'll pay $1,400 a month for somebody over 65. Phoenix is cheaper, so we'll pay you $1,100. And Medicare Advantage companies are just like, you know what, we'll advertise in rich zip codes to get healthy, wealthy people, and we'll leave the rest to the public system. They're not improving patient outcomes.
Yeah.
They're not increasing utilization. They put up barriers and blocks, like you have to get a referral from your primary care doctor. We will do none of that. There are lots of ways to make money in healthcare. Our investors sometimes push us towards that. I have fortunately had a successful startup firm. I'm not doing this for the money primarily. I just want to do what actually affects patient health.
And we're all here for this reason. You know?
Yeah.
We all have other things that we could be doing. There are other ways to make money. But I've never been in a more mission-led company. Patient first.
Yeah, and it resonates with everybody. Even if they're healthy, we've got parents, we've got grandparents.
Ooh.
Like, who wouldn't feel empowered and able to help them out just with their care and make them feel a little more at ease during a time of struggle?
Completely. And actually, I think one of the best use cases for what we launched today, vital.io/translate, is if you have an elderly parent or somebody that you're caring for, especially if they're elderly and they're a little confused and they went to the doctor's office and they were like, hey, Dad, what did they discuss? And it's like, I don't know. Put their notes in there and see what actually comes out, diseases and issues they actually have.
Yeah.
I was talking about the full story. You know, I had a friend whose sister died basically because they didn't catch something that was on page 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
Because humans can't scan text that quickly. And you might have hundreds of pages of medical history if you're a chronically ill person. And sometimes that history really matters. And doctors give it like 2 or 3 minutes to maybe scan through. AI does a way better job at picking out the stuff that they might not. The fair comparison, we've marked it as 99.4% safe. We've got a panel of doctors, independent people employed by the company. It's not without risk. If 1 in 200 times, it'll miss something small.
Mm-hmm.
But doctors miss something big 1 in every 10 times. And so the stats are actually much better for AI than they are for humans, and that's the proper comparison to make.
Yeah. And when we have some great clinicians on our team. When I talk to our clinical staff, our advisory board, about the stuff that they really want to see, all of them talk about patients paying attention to and understanding their discharge instructions.
Yeah.
The value there is enormous. The value in terms of long-term care and in terms of immediate outcomes is huge.
Nice.
I mean, were there different specialties within medicine that were a little more challenging than the others?
Well, we started out with medical imaging. And medical imaging is nice because it's confined.
Mm-hmm.
CT scans, x-rays, MRIs, and then what we've released today, I don't know what people are going to put into it. And so it has to be pretty robust to doctor's notes, nurse's notes, lab results, all sorts of things.
Double check this.
Just a
battery warning.
Okay.
It's time to wrap it up.
Yeah. That's a good time to wrap.
We really appreciate your time today to come talk to us, guys. Such a product that I think everyone can benefit from, learn from, put their family members at ease, and from our listeners at CTTA.
The Prompt Engineering Podcast. Yeah.
We really appreciate the time.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, really appreciate it. Fun talk.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, we never get to talk about the nerdy tech.
Dude, we
stuff,
can go freaking hard at all. I'm going to change the memory card for that. Yeah, I think I held off. I'm like, all right, tell us about your error handling later.
Yeah.
Hallucinations.
Yeah, I was like, no, we're not going to that.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you.
Thanks
so much.
Hey, great to meet you
both. Yeah.
Thanks for coming to the Prompt Engineering Podcast, a podcast dedicated to helping you be a better prompt engineer. Episodes are released every Wednesday. I also host weekly masterminds where you can collaborate with me and 50 other people live on Zoom to improve your prompts. Join us at promptengineeringmastermind.com for the schedule of the upcoming masterminds. Finally, please remember to like and subscribe. If you're listening to the audio podcast, rate us 5 stars. That helps us teach more people. And if you're listening to the podcast, you might want to join us on YouTube so you can actually see the prompts. You can do that by going to youtube.com/@PromptEngineeringPodcast. See you next week.